Sup, cousin? Welcome to Coco Conjure. Here we talk about all things hoodoo, folklore, and spiritual journeys. My goal is to give foundation to the novice and inspiration to the advanced practitioner. If you have not guessed already, my name is Coco. As evident by the title, this episode is an Other Tales original. So this short story is written by me using knowledge of folklore and spiritual work while following our root lady extraordinaire, Monroe Devereaux. Listening to the previous stories are helpful, but not necessary, as each entry of Monroe's story stands on its own. Usually at the end of folklore episodes, I do a breakdown, and yes, it still feels weird doing it to my own work, but at the end, I will extract whatever work was done and give you a play-by-play. So, without further ado, I present to you the case of Lin Nguyen. Mama Green's speakeasy was located at the back of her dress shop on the main strip in St. Stephen's. Not unusual for a small town filled with small businesses, really. Everything doubled as something else. The tackle shop next door had a bar and pool hall upstairs. The library had a bank attached on the side. And the only lawyer in town worked out the upstairs offices in the only grocery store in town. What was unusual was how packed Mama Green's speakeasy was on this night. The full moon brought out all the freaks. It was Friday payday, so everyone was rich, at least for a little while. Bodies jived and gyrated to the unholy rhythm produced by the house band. Mama Green herself manned the bar, a sight every patron was happy to see. Mama didn't partake in the devil's spirits, as she was, in fact, a good Christian woman, but that never stopped her from pouring with a heavy hand. Another touch that made this particular Friday a special offering was Lenora Green Winston sitting in with the house band. Lenora was no slouch to look at and had stronger pipes than the organ at church. Her alto, with the right balance of sensual tone and breathiness, won the St. Stephen's Tabernacle Choir first place at the state competitions 4 years in a row. That kind of MVP status won her the nickname Lin Nguyen. And make no mistake, Lin knew she was a winner. As she stood on stage serenading an inebriated crowd, a white rose tucked in her human hair wig and the mic a mere plaything in her hands, she knew she owned that room. And she behaved that way, a sway of her hips with the beat, a well-placed vocal run, her hands slowly skimming over her chest as she full-throated a line about being some man's baby tonight, had the crowd eating out the palm of her hands and hanging on her every note. The key to singing, Lin would tell you, is playing the part. If the song was about losing your man to some she-devil in a red dress, then you sang like you had an ear full of tears and a broken heart. If it was a gospel song, then you sang like God himself was sitting in the rafters, waiting for the offering of talent to be served. And if you were singing a song like the one she sang on this full moon Friday night, one about passion-filled nights and satisfyingly sore mornings, you sang like you were a goddess in the flesh. And as Lin ran her hands up her legs to give some random blue-eyed brother a peek of her garter belt and a shapely thigh, she was definitely channeling a sex goddess. Each note out her mouth became a siren song. Her purposefully sculpted body was purely a vessel to the divine sensual until that last ba-boom on the drum and strum of the guitar. As the song came to a close, she rested her weight on her red-bottom stilettos, kneeled down until she came eye to eye with that light-skinned blue-eyed brother in the front of the stage, and cooed the final line to him. Unable to help himself, he reached up and placed a gentle kiss on the back of her gloved hand. Lin gave a coy smile, white teeth contrasting in a dazzling display against her dark skin. Then, as the band gave the final flourish, she did something she never did before. Perhaps it was the effects of the spirit cultivated in the room. Perhaps it was the sex goddess gripping her tight and riding her soul. Either way, Lynn leaned over the stage and placed a sweet kiss on the blue-eyed brother's forehead. The interaction was so light, so delicate. Her ruby woo-stained lips didn't smudge. But it was enough for the blue-eyed brother to go red from clavicle to forehead. Moment over, Lynn stood and gave the band the signal that she was ready for the final song in her set. And just as the drummer gave the 1, 2, 3, 4 count intro, a large, masculine woman dressed in a bathrobe and a bonnet hopped on stage and shoved Lynn into the guitarist. "You fucking hussy," the big woman exclaimed, her voice rich and low. "Girl, what is your problem?" Lynn yelped as she tried to gain her bearings. "You heard me, you thought," the big woman huffed as she hauled off and slapped the spit out of Lynn's mouth and the flour out of Lynn's hair. Then she reached forward and pulled on Lynn's dress till it ripped. The already stunned room gave a collective gasp and waited for Lynn's response. "That was vintage Chanel," Lynn said in disbelief. "No one gives a flying shit about your thrift store knockoffs, bitch." Lynn's eyes bugged out. "Bitch, that was vintage Chanel," Lynn screamed in a battle cry. The sex goddess now replaced with a war goddess, she lunged for the woman twice her size and tackled her off the stage. The big woman rolled on top, trapping Lynn under her. She pulled off Lynn's wig at some point during the scuffle and proceeded to stuff it in Lynn's mouth in an attempt to suffocate her with it. Lynn punched and kicked, but there was little effect. So she switched tactics and clawed her well-manicured acrylics into the woman's eyes with full determination to expose her optical jelly. She never got the chance to gouge out the woman's eyes, though, because Mama Green called for backup. Two men pulled the big woman off Lynn, and the blue-eyed brother helped Lynn to her feet. Lynn steadied herself with a firm grip on the man's biceps and matched her breathing to his. "That's her, isn't it, Earl?" the big woman seethed. "That's the Jezebel you left me for, the one you left your children for." The blue-eyed man peeled his eyes off Lynn and stared at the big woman with pure disgust on his face. "Lady, I don't know you." Seeing red, the big woman escaped her captors and pushed Lynn and the blue-eyed man apart. Lynn ran. The big woman took a swing at the blue-eyed man and knocked him clean out before settling her sights on Lynn again. The crowd parted like the Red Sea as the freight train of a woman charged full power toward her target. And just as Lynn made it to the swinging doors that led back to the dress shop facade, the large woman grabbed her by the back of what was left of her vintage Chanel and pulled the dress clean from her body. Lynn, now wearing nothing but her silk and whalebone corset, matching panties, garter, gloves, stilettos, and a wig cap, did what any of us would have done. She reached for the closest thing next to her, in this case, a 2-gallon jug full of corn liquor, and swung it upside the woman's head. The big woman hit the floor just as the wail of cop sirens sounded outside. "So do you think you can help?" Mama Green said to Ro as she dabbed her eyes with a handkerchief. Ro, utterly confused, looked between Mama Green and Lynn, searching for an answer she wasn't sure she was going to find. "Help with what exactly?" Ro finally sputtered. "Help my niece," Mama Green said, more tears threatening to spill. Rose sighed as she recounted the story Mama Green told her. She was dragged out of her bed at the ungodly hour of 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, mind you, by Mama Green wailing at her door. The older woman didn't stop talking about this not quite lover spat turned bar fight the entire ride to county lockup. And somehow, some way, an uncaffeinated Roe, still in her house muumuu, turban, large cardigan, and house shoes, was supposed to help a distraught Mama Green and half-naked, wigless Lin Wen. Roe sighed again, shrugged off her cardigan, and passed it to Lin through the cell bars. Lin nodded in approval and snatched it quickly. Finally, someone acknowledges the real issues around here. Like the fact that I am indecent. I mean, I look great, but I'm still indecent. The guard monitoring the interaction snickered. So, what happened to the vintage Chanel? Ro wondered out loud as she dug into her oversized bag for her hold-it-all makeup bag. You think you can salvage it? A dress like that is priceless, I bet. Lin took the goodies Ro offered from her makeup bag. Mama owns the dress shop. Like, it's a real dress shop in the front of the speakeasy. I'm sure she can mend it like new. I'm more worried about the wig, to be honest. Ladies, we have bigger problems than dresses and wigs. Mama Green rolled her eyes at the thought. What? Lin exclaimed, completely taken aback. Natural human hair cared for by some Asian lady with a strict rice water wash day regime being stuffed in my mouth and stomped on by every backwater bill in a police uniform is a travesty. Lin looked at the guard. No offense, Bill. Oh, all the offense taken, Miss Lin, Bill said with a laugh. Mama Green looked to Ro for backup. Ro shrugged and agreed. It is a complete travesty. You are supposed to be helping, Mama Green hissed. Stop encouraging her nonsense. And how am I supposed to help exactly? Ro asked again. Do you not see the scarf bald on my head? I'm a total Frederick Douglass under this thing. Have you seen photos of Frederick Douglass? Lin laughed. That man's hair was pressed and laid. You hear me? Pressed and laid. You are supposed to help with my niece's case, Mama Green said in an attempt to get the conversation back on track. I don't know if you know this, but I'm not a lawyer or a bail bondsman. No, but you got the gift, right? Ethel and Bethel won't shut up about their play niece chasing off not one, but two haints and surviving a meeting with the devil at the crossroads. Ro let the word float in the air. So, she wants you to do some woo-woo, hoodoo, witchcraft shit and fix the judge, Lin said frankly. Now refreshed and repoised, as only a goddess like her can be under such circumstances and with such limited tools, she handed Ro back her emergency makeup bag. And, I mean, if you have a snack in that purse, I'll take that too. You look like the kind of woman who would carry snacks. Ro wanted to be insulted, but she did have a variety of snacks in her purse. Instead of reaching for any of them, she crossed her arms. I don't do work for others. I can barely do work for myself. Ro shifted her weight, taking the topic seriously for the first time since she was hauled here. There is a conjure man in the city, though. I hear he's on retainer for the governor and small town local celebrities. Maybe you can try him. No. Mama Green shouted as she stomped her foot. It has got to be you. Devereaux, take care of this town. Your family's blessings helped to build this town. It's what kept us afloat through the worst times, and it's a part of the very foundations we stand on. And your uncle, forgive me for saying it, your uncle ran away. Self-serving man he was, he just ran away. There, I said it. He had responsibilities, people who depended on him, and he left anyway. But you're here now, with your uncle's gifts, with your people's gifts. You are here to uphold the legacy, to make sure all of us are okay is the bare minimum required of you. And some crazy wench, excuse my language, came into my shop and assaulted one of our own. No conjure man from the big city will ever understand or care as much as you will. It has got to be a Devereaux, and you are the only Devereaux we have. By the end of the speech, Mama Green was in tears again. Roe and Lynn looked at each other for a moment before Lynn added, "And you are rich, or so I hear. So technically, you could bail me out if necessary." Roe pulled tissue and a bottle of water out of her purse and handed it to Mama Green. "Ma'am, I honestly don't know what I'm doing. It was pure fluke that I survived those haints and removing malicious spirits and doing what, court case work? It's just not the same, not even a little bit. I wouldn't even know where to start." "But you'll figure it out, right?" Lynn said. "I mean, I learn a song and 5 minutes later, I can make you think I wrote it. I have the talent and I sell it like I need the dimes. If you really did sell yourself to the devil, you definitely have the power. Now you just have to believe in it. Now you just have to sell it, you know. Play the part. Become the conjure woman Mama Green hopes you are. The conjure woman I kind of need you to be." "You're serious?" Roe tilted her head like a cat and narrowed her eyes at Lynn as if she were trying to spot the bullshit. "Do I look like a joke to you?" Lynn gestured to her makeshift cardigan dress, wig cap, and freshly painted face. Roe swiped the scarf off her head and pulled the protein bar out of her purse before handing both over to Lynn. Satisfied that she did all she could here, Roe turned heel and nodded to the guard. "Where are you going?" Mama Green shouted after her. "I'm gonna go figure it out, I guess," Roe shouted over her shoulder. The Honorable Judge Brown was set to preside over all the weekend lockups that Monday morning. Judge Brown was an old man, the kind of old man who has been old his entire life. He never smiled, he never partook in revelry, he was logical and methodical, and he had never gone further than an hour outside of St. Stephen's town limits. He came from a lineage of judges who were also old since their birth and also knew backwoods customs and superstitions and taught them to him. So as he stepped up to the bench and saw a fine powder covering his gavel and chair, he knew without a doubt that someone was trying to fix him. It happened here and again. Some superstitious citizen believed in the old ways and thought themselves a root worker, or worst yet, they saw that charlatan in town and followed his instructions on how to fix a courtroom. A waste of time, really. "Can someone come clean up this mess? Who did this?" Judge Brown said in a dull tone. Clerks and attendants scrambled at his command, but no one admitted to the poor attempt at fixing him. "I asked, who did this?" he said again with all the authority his position allowed. Just then, a stout woman with two wide hips and a familiar nose breezed into the courtroom holding a garment bag and a heavy handbag. She beelined it for the lawyer and his client who were first up on the docket. Having never left St. Stephen's, he knew the client all too well. Miss Lynn Wynn, the voice that led his church choir to victory 4 years running. The short woman he'd never seen before sat behind Lynn and her lawyer and whispered something. Before stuffing a leather pouch in the lawyer's pocket, she handed Lynn the garment bag, and upon inspection, Lynn didn't want it. "Do I look like I'd wear this boxy Liz Claiborne with this ensemble? At least tell me there's a belt in that big-ass bag of holding you carry." After a stare-off between Lynn and the familiar-looking stranger, Lynn caved and put the blazer on. The strange woman reached in her purse for socks and handed them to Lynn. "Really? Socks with these heels? Devil help me, put on the damn socks, Lynn." Lynn chuckled and did as she was instructed. The bench, now clean of the riffraff, the judge took a seat and the bailiff called the case. "Hello, Lenora," Judge Brown said, using her first name. "Judge Brown, it's good to see you," Lynn said, turning on the charm. "Yes, I missed your voice in church yesterday." "Oh, I'm sorry to have missed the sermon, Your Honor, but I found myself unable to escape my accommodations over the weekend." Lynn's response earned her a firm look from her lawyer. "If I may, Your Honor, I'd like to have this case dismissed. Miss Green Winston's actions on Friday night were in self-defense and a one-off occurrence." "Dismissed, you say?" Judge Brown's attention was drawn to the stranger sitting behind Lynn and her counsel. Was that woman chewing gum? Why was she smacking so loudly? And why was she staring him down like that? It was unnerving how her eyes never blinked. And she knew the moment she had his attention too, he could tell, because her eyes softened and she sat forward in her seat. He knew the counsel had continued to make a case for dismissal, but Judge Brown didn't hear a word of it. He could swear he knew her face, even if he didn't know this strange lady. I'm sorry, counsel. Let me stop you right there. Who is that woman sitting behind you?" "Behind? Oh, that's Ms. Devereaux. She's here to support my client." "Mm-hmm. A sister, really," Lynn added. It clicked for Judge Brown. "As in, she's one of those Devereaux's." The nose was a dead giveaway. She had her uncle's nose, her grandmother's nose. There were many days he walked past the Devereaux house as a child while holding his cross in prayer, just as his mama had instructed. Witches, the lot of them. How did he miss that? She was dressed in a long flowing blue caftan, decorated in beads and shells, and had a weird looking key around her neck. The same kind of key that her uncle wore. The same kind all the diabolical Devereaux's wore. And now he had a diabolical Devereaux sitting in his courtroom trying to peel back the layers of his soul with her eyes. "You should be careful of the company you keep, Lenora. That's how you got into this mess, I'm sure."
"Oh, Your Honor, if I may," the lawyer said. "Ms. Green Winston is an upstanding member of our community. You know this to be true. She'd never start a fight in her aunt's establishment, and even the police report states that Miss Green Winston was only trying to escape from a mad woman."
"A total mad woman. The woman was a total mad woman. She was a mad woman."
Something whispered in Judge Brown's ears. "It's also clear that Ms. Green Winston is subject to a random act of violence and should not be penalized for her self-defense measures," the lawyer continued.
"Yes, yes, Lynn only tried to escape," the whisper returned,
this time mimicking his own voice in his head. "Frankly, Your Honor, Miss Green Winston should be the one pressing charges, but instead, she wishes that woman gets the help she needs."
"There's no way this angel should be locked up. That's not fair. And as a judge, you are fair and just," the voice in his head continued over the lawyer's monologue. Lynn is a good woman from a good family, just trying to use her talent to serve others. The woman is well enough.
no one died, and she is no more or less hurt than Lenora. You are going to let Lenora walk out of here with a warning. That's the only fair thing to do. Judge Brown's eyes darted between the Devereaux woman and the lawyer. The Devereaux woman slowed down her chewing and fingered the key in her hands carefully. She was still looking at him and still not blinking. He knew what was going on here. Many people came into his courtroom trying to fix him, trying to make him bend to their will, trying to get an easier sentence, trying to sway justice, and none of them succeeded. If anything, he would double down, giving out the maximum sentences and fines. That is enough, counsel, Judge Brown said. You overstep the limits of your role in this court.
My apologies, Your Honor. The words kept coming to me and I couldn't stop them, the lawyer said.
For the first time, Judge Brown realized the lawyer was patting his pocket, the very one the Devereaux woman placed the leather pouch in. He narrowed his eyes at that Devereaux woman behind Lenora. There was no way he was going to let her in his head. No way he was going to let this devil's plaything get her way. I've reached my decision. Ms. Lenora Green Winston, I've known you since childhood. I know there is no way that you would have started that fight, and I understand that you did what you could to get away before you had to turn to violence. You are a good woman, simply trying to entertain our town. And as your counsel stated, and as I see here, even the police report provides enough proof for self-defense. Judge Brown shifted in his chair. Some dust from under his feet stirred, and he sneezed.
Oh, God bless you, Lynn said with a smile.
Oh, thank you, Lenora. Judge Brown smiled back. It hurt. Being the first smile he'd ever smiled in his life. He opened his mouth, and in his mind, he could hear himself saying that bringing this heathen into his courtroom and turning the hearing into some exercise in hoodoo, voodoo, mambo jumbo is enough for him to hold both Lynn, the lawyer, and that Devereaux woman in contempt of court. But instead, he said, because of this, I move to have this case dismissed. See the clerks on the way out to settle any outstanding fees. And Ms. Green Winston, Lenora, I expect to hear that voice in church this coming Sunday. Judge Brown swung his gavel, and that was the end of that. He came back to himself by exhaling a breath he didn't even know he was holding. The Devereaux woman did the same. Judge Brown idly grabbed for the crucifix hidden under his robe. Lenora and her companions, jubilated, moved to leave, but Judge Brown stopped them.
And what's your first name, Devereaux?
You can call me Roe, Your Honor.
Roe Devereaux.
Yes, Your Honor?
Don't ever come to my courtroom again. Do you understand me?
Not even if I find myself in trouble, Your Honor.
Oh, you are the trouble, Judge Brown responded before announcing a 5-minute recess so he could gather himself.
Mama Green greeted Roe and Lynn outside the courtroom, her heart too fragile to take anything that could have happened inside.
So, did you do it?
Yes, ma'am. I'm a free lady.
Good. I knew you could do it. Mama Green pulled Roe into a tight hug.
I'm afraid that's a one and done. Roe patted Mama Green on the back.
How you mean, baby?
Oh, she means Judge Brown told her to kick rocks and stay gone, Lynn said with a chuckle.
That and... if I'm being completely honest, I don't know if any of that worked. I don't know if none of it worked. I don't know if all of it worked. I just kind of threw stuff at a wall and hope it stuck.
What you did was do good, Mama Green said.
Ms. Devereaux, I should give this back to you, the lawyer interrupted.
Keep it, Rose said, tucking the leather pouch back in his pocket. Just consider it a good luck charm or something.
Or something. I've never spoken that way before in my life in court. Can I come see you before my cases? You can do whatever it is you do over this charm.
Of course you can, Lynn said before Ro could turn him away. She'd be happy to help anyone who needs it.
Right, Ro?
The three of them looked at Ro expectantly. When she came into town all those months ago, she honestly wanted to start a garden, fix up her house, provide clean sheets and a hot breakfast for the occasional out-of-towner. This is not what she had in mind. But with the three of them applying silent pressure, Ro folded like fresh laundry.
Sure. Just find me at the Devereaux house whenever you need me.
Oh, thank you, Miss Devereaux. Until next time, ladies, Mama Green. And like that, the lawyer excused himself.
Oh, man, I am glad you are feeling charitable, sis, Lynn said as she wrapped an arm around Ro's shoulder.
And why is that? Ro was sure she didn't want the answer.
Because I've got fees to pay and you have deep pockets. And frankly, you owe me for making me wear this fugly blazer and socks with these heels. God, these buttons are atrocious.
You come work at my B&B when the renovations are done and maybe sing a few nights a month as entertainment and you've got a deal.
And just like that, Ro gained a sister.
Okay. So now we are filling out the characters in this town. This was kind of fun to write. This story is based on two things. One is the story of how my sister, you guys know her as Big Sis, actually got into a bar fight. She was out with friends and some girl thought Big Sis was sleeping with her man when in actuality it was Big Sis's friend that was dilly-dallying with the other woman's man. And the other woman's man, right? She purposely brought my big sis to that club just to stir up some shit, you know? She knew that they were going to be there and thought, you know, her and big sis could get a little drama going. So when old girl comes up to my big sis to start some drama without thinking hard and running on pure instinct, big sis picked up a beer bottle and cracked it clean over the girl's head. Just crack clean over her head. So big sis, she had to show up to court. And our aunt went with her as support. And I don't know if the judge was just lax or if he was feeling bad for Big Sis or maybe because, you know, Big Sis was kind of young at the time. But he just let her go with a slap on the wrist, really. The second thing this story is based on is Dr. Buzzard and his courtroom shenanigans. He used to sit in court and chewing John is the name of the root. And stared down people so bad that they would have seizures, you know. I detail all of that in the episode High Sheriff versus Dr. Buzzard. Easily one of my favorite episodes, and I encourage you to listen to it for more details. Smaller details of note about the story I wrote. Workers and may fix up mojo bags for lawyers to hold onto while they orate a case. That mojo may include things like deer tongue leaves for elegance and calendula for success. Fun fact, calendula is one of the main ingredients I use in my personal Crown of Success oil and powders. Workers may also wash their clients' clothes in a special bath formulated for court case work, socks in particular to utilize the foot track magic. And of course, there is the fixing of the judge or of the courtroom using powders. And depending on the type of case, depends on the type of powder you would want to create or purchase. And back in Buzzard's day, he would gain access to the courtroom and, you know, lay the powders down on the judge's bench. Again, go back and listen to High Sheriff versus Dr. Buzzard for more details on that. I would imagine that trying to fix a courtroom nowadays would get you locked up. Like, I don't think you can do that anymore. I don't think you would have access or anything like that. And for true and for sure, Ro had no business doing court case work as new as she is into her practice, and she honestly has never had any experience with that up until this point. Like she said, what she found the crossroad man, and she, you know, removed some haints from her house. Like, it's a different set of skills, and definitely not something that everyone specializes in. Court case work, I mean, not every worker specializes in that. Usually, workers have a set niche that they do. Okay, and that's that. Thank you guys for staying with me for as long as you have. This is the second to last episode of season 3. I can't believe I'm saying that, but summer is almost here, and your girl would like to continue her outsideness as much as possible and fill up her Saturdays and her Sundays with all sorts of fun things to do. So there's this episode, and then the next one will be about the summer equinox, to continue our series on solar rhythm. But before we get out of here, cousin, I want to let you know that you deserve the world. We all have our talents, and we all were new at some point. I do not advise doing work for others until you have a full grasp on your own practice, or if you, you know, have a mentor to learn from. But it's important, I think, that we share our blessings when we can. And cousin, when you call for your blessings, especially when justified, they will come to you. I'll see you guys next time.